From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM, Emerging Artists Tonight. Next hour, quantum physics and our origins with Dr. Amit Goswami. So get ready for that. But here's what's happening. Isaac lost most of its destructive steam by Saturday, with the Gulf Coast still recovering, though, from its battering earlier in the week. But the storm managed to bring a small amount of needed rain to drought-stricken parts of the Midwest. Up to 3 inches of rain expected now in Mississippi and the Ohio valleys, though some parts of Illinois and Indiana could get even more, thousands still without power there. A New Jersey produce company recalling a number of products distributed in the Northeast that had contained fresh-cut mangoes because of potential salmonella contamination. Here we go again. The products in question have had an expiration date of August 28th, but the company, it's called F&S Produce, working with the Food and Drug Administration, issued the voluntary recall regardless. No illnesses reported yet. Health officials are investigating already, though, 103 known cases of salmonella infection from a unrelated recall. The measure follows that recall by Splendid Products, which had 5 lots of mangoes imported from Mexico that are tainted with salmonella. The Reverend Sun Myung-moon, self-proclaimed Messiah who turned his Unification Church into a worldwide religious movement and befriended North Korean leaders as well as U.S. presidents, has died. Reverend Moon was 92 years old. St. Louis and Johnny Rose was a Moonie. When he was 19, stayed with him until he was 30. He's with us for a moment here. Johnny, what can you tell us about Reverend Moon and his Unification Church? Why did so many people flock to him?
Well, you got to look at it. It was the late 60s, the early 70s, and my dad happened to be a Church of Christ fundamentalist minister, and we were looking for answers and a new way to do things, Reverend Moon wrote a book called The Divine Principle. And it talked about the principle of creation. It was kind of a combination of Buddhist and Christianity. And it also explained the purpose of Jesus' life and the parallels in history. It was very compelling, very, very. For someone who's searching, I'd had a bad drug experience in my younger years. And I was looking for deep, deep answers that my parents' faith couldn't give me. But the conclusion of the book was that Reverend Moon was the second coming of Jesus, and then he and his wife, Hakja Han, were the true parents of mankind. And so it was very beautiful concept to have true parents for
what,
mankind.
What got you to leave, John, at the age of 30? Did you just feel fulfilled and you wanted to move on, or what?
I felt that there was somehow cracks in the idea of, I didn't feel like, in fact, there was a Reverend Moon's daughter-in-law left the church and wrote a book called In the Shadow of the Moons. Her last name is Hong. I don't remember her first name, but there were tracks, the things that made me feel that he wasn't all that, you know, he was purported to be. I was in one of the mass weddings, July 1982. I was in a Madison Square Garden 2000 couples mass wedding. I was in that. But I just got tired of being told what to do and how to do. I think we all have to question, you know, the religions that we follow in our youth.
And lastly, John, is the church, the Unification Church, is it still strong, or are people leaving it in flocks?
Reverend Moon was a genius, you know, and he set up many, many businesses, and there's still many loyal members that have been there for years, and they have ways of supporting themselves. Everything from Iowa pharmaceuticals that made ginseng tea to fishing.
And the Washington Times newspaper.
The Washington Times newspaper is still very strong. So he was very, very adept at establishing businesses and the loyalty of the people. Most of the people I know have left, but I still have friends here in St. Louis that are members. Some of the people have stayed for 25, 30 years. Some members have 4 or 5 kids.
Okay, John. All right. Thanks for being so candid there, John. Reverend Moon, dead at the age of 92. Richard Bach, the author of the 1970s best-selling Jonathan Livingston Seagull, a book I could not put down, It's a small book anyway. Among other spiritually oriented books rooted in themes of flight and self-discovery, Serious Condition, after his small plane crashed in the state of Washington. While all the pretty pleases in the world won't get you what you want in your adult life, even if you put a little cherry on top, but there's another way to win people over to your side. Simply ask for something weird first. That's what a researcher is saying. It's basically the classic foot-in-the-door approach. Psychiatrist Peter Bragan with us. Peter, interesting. Well, how does this work?
Well, you know, I think it's just one more manipulative way of relating to people. Certainly, if you go to your boss and you say, give me a raise and I need it, my family's ill, and your boss isn't going to do that. And then you say, well, can I have a week's vacation? Yeah, here's a week's vacation. So you make them feel guilty.
Yeah.
Now, the article doesn't say that. But I think the thing that's the most interesting about this is the writer, this Mandy Oaklander from Prevention Magazine, she very positively says there's another sneaky way to win people over to your side.
Yeah, that was strange.
Yeah, ask for something weird first. And it's, you know, if the study's junk science, her article is junk food for the soul. It's encouraging cheating and misleading in order to get what you want from others.
And manipulating.
It's manipulating. It is. It made me think of when I was a little kid, George, and I went to my dad and I told him so proudly I'd figure out a way to sneak a lunch without paying for it from the beach cafeteria. And he said, son, bright men can always find ways to cheat. And his tone just said, nothing to be proud of. And I think we really deteriorated when major outlets are publishing things that include, and you really encourage you to be sneaky. It's one of the worst signs you see in a child.
What's the best approach, Peter? Just a direct little ask for it and see what happens.
I think the direct approach is living an honest, direct, straightforward life where you don't try to cheat people out of what they want to give.
Thanks, Peter. Peter's website, Bragan, BREGGIN.com, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. The supernatural thriller, The Possession, ranked number one on U.S. and Canadian box office charts on Sunday, dethroning two-time champ Expendables 2 and setting up for a likely win over the long U.S. holiday weekend. In a moment, we're going to talk about abuses of power, specifically in education. Robert Rose joins us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. It's called Abuses of Power in Education and the Complete Teacher. Retired teacher Dr. Robert Rose challenges the educational system, and he's with us to talk about his latest work. Robert, how are you?
I'm good, George. Glad to have you on the show.
Tell me, what got you to write this kind of a book?
Well, because that's what happens in education. And as Tom said to me, you know, you're interested in power and abuses of power in general throughout society. And generally, people do abuse power. And my efforts to be innovative, and I was very innovative, I was constantly butting heads with people who told me I couldn't, I shouldn't do this. I couldn't do that. You know what the SRA kit is? You know, the kits that are on all reading kits in every school in
right,
the nation?
Right, right.
Well, I think I was the first person to order one when I was in L.A. when I just started my second year of teaching, and I brought it into my classroom. I had 42 kids in that room, 42 big sixth graders, and we were doing three-group reading, and you were timed from every place you had to go to, you know, take the kids and move them everywhere. And the consultants came in and timed us. And it was really boring and irritating. And when I saw about the SRA kit, I thought, God, this is great. So I brought it into the room. I bought it with my own money.
Did it all on your own?
Yeah, it was $50. I was only making about $600 a month then. And the kids just went absolutely bananas because it was all these different age, grade levels, all different kinds of interests. And they were just doing great. And so the principal came in, and he saw that, and he said, what the hell are you think you're doing? Because the room was noisy, and, of course, you couldn't have a noisy room,
right,
which is also ridiculous. And so I said, look at the kids. Look at what they're doing. And he said, where did you get this stuff? And I said, I ordered it. And he said, you bought that out of your own money? Yeah. He said, what makes you think you know more about teaching reading than the consultants and the people that run the school?
Oh, geez.
And I said, look at the kids. I said, have you ever seen kids so excited about reading? They're sharing everything. They're talking about everything. He said, if you don't turn it back, if it's here tomorrow, it'll be your last day in L.A.
That's frustrating. I mean, we needed more teachers like you, Robert. And, you know, teachers with creativity always had the thumb put on them, always.
Right. And the reason is that the people, to get the power to be able to manipulate other people, you have to play the game, right? I mean, it's in almost all businesses and
sure.
hierarchies and everything, and you play the game. My wife said, well, why don't you play the game and be a principal? And I said, because when you play the game, you become like the game player. I said, the reason I'm as creative as I am is because I refuse to play the game. And
can you succeed by not playing the game?
Not totally, because I had to play somewhat. If I really was insubordinate, they could fire me on the spot. And so I had to learn what was the structure. I'd understand the structure. I'd understand whom are the people that were manipulating me, how they thought. And I studied them, and I knew how far I could push them. But I didn't push them any further than they could tolerate. Otherwise, I said they can fire you for insubordination.
Robert,
almost nothing else.
The school official who basically chastised you for being creative and doing this, why didn't he simply say, what a great idea, we should implement this in everything we do here? Why didn't he see that it was working and congratulate you? Was it because he didn't think of it?
No, I think it's because he was part of the structure, and the structure says the higher, nothing comes from the bottom up. It comes from the top down. And that's the way it is in most businesses. It's been in almost everything I've ever been in. But the problem is that the people that are the most creative are the ones that are working at the level of whatever their job is.
That's right.
And then they can come up like even McDonald's, you know, if the person at McDonald's said to each person, you know, the work, if you've got a creative idea, something that you can do that will help us, we're going to reward you. Well, they don't do that. They say you have to follow exactly because every McDonald's has to do the same thing. Now, they're very successful, so they don't feel they have to change. But, you know, I know that in General Motors, they did some of the where they asked the people online to be creative, and they started saving money. And the people were rewarded by coming up with creative ideas. And if you can think this way, it's fine. But the problem is that one of the things that I think about is everything that you do is trying to make you as a person feel significant, because everyone tries to control you and make you feel insignificant.
That's true.
And so the person gets to be a principal. He gets to be a principal, and his significance is how well he can control you. And if you're doing something that he can't explain to the school board or to his superintendent, he's in deep crap. So he's not about to have somebody coming up with creative ideas. They don't want you rocking the boat.
Well, with this abuse, as you said, it's an industry, it's in schools, it's just about in every facet of life.
That's right.
Where the person at the top wants to abuse power and doesn't understand that the ranking level of employees, they're the ones that get the job done. They're the ones that see things. I remember a company put together, they built a bar restaurant, and none of the people who built it, the architects, none of them had the smarts to talk to the bartenders who worked there. And so they built this thing. And it was all wrong. I mean, the bartenders couldn't reach for what they needed. The dishwasher was in the wrong place. It was a disaster. All they had to do was sit down with the people who work there every day and say, design this for us. We'll have the architect do it, but you tell us what you need and how you need it. It's just, to me, it's common sense, Robert.
Yeah, well, it's like the designers that design all these schools where there aren't any windows. And we know from all the research studies that kids do better if there's light. not the artificial light, but real light coming in. My rooms, I had the doors open, I had the windows open, I had no, I pulled all the shades if there were shades, and the kids, you know, they could feel it. And if there was any way, you know, fortunately you're in Southern California, we can take them outside and read. We can do things, you know, on the playground real easy. It's not that easy in the Midwest because I lived there and I know that's true. But if you can get kids to get, the more time they have outside, the healthier they are. But the, one of the things that I was upset about and about abuses of power is that they think that the way that children should learn is, you know, the three R's. And that should be done, you know, in a certain, a very specific way, and you should spend a certain amount of time doing that. But what I found out from the research and from my own experimentation is my kids did better when they had art, when they had music, when they had drama.
Yep, they were more creative. You're right.
They were more creative, and they read better, and they did math better, and they wrote better. And the statistics on my class will prove that. And teachers would say, well, how can you get away with doing all those things? Like when that NLCB, whatever it is, from Bush, you know, and teachers were afraid. And now they're afraid again. We have schools all over the country now where teachers don't have recesses. Their lunchtime is cut. Kids have no physical activity. And in the midst of the worst epidemic of obesity in the history of this country. And we're not having, the kids are sitting on their butts all day long, you know, going over and over reading. And I just had a gal on my show just yesterday.
Yeah, you do your own little radio show,
yeah.
Don't you? Okay.
And Kathy Kites, she got her kids reading and doing things, but she would spend just 5 minutes at a time with them, with a specific thing, as they were little kids. And she is absolutely right. I would tell teachers, as a supervising teacher, don't spend more than 5 or 10 minutes talking to the whole class. Then get out, have the kids talking to each other.
That's right.
Asking questions.
Make it interactive.
Interactive. Yeah. And there is a movement in education to do this. But when you have the standardized test, which is just a political power play to determine who gets money for certain things, and then the money is distributed that way, and it's ridiculous because the standardized test, the guy from Popham from UCLA, he proved that these standardized tests are really terrible. They don't do what they're supposed to do. We have everything we need to test kids in every kind of subject that we need. We need to individualize them.
And it starts at the level of schools, I think, because, again, it filters into business. Robert, what would you like people to take away with them from abuses of power?
To think about how you can, what I did in my classroom is called, and in the book, The Complete Teacher, tells you how to do it. It's called a self-sustaining classroom. My kids were self-confident, self-aware, and could take responsibility for their action. I empowered them. I didn't expect to stand there in front of them all day telling them what to do. I gave them a chance to do the things that they want.
And I bet they looked forward to coming into your class, didn't they?
No, because every day there was something different. And because I was not stuck with, you know, the thing on the board, you know. One of the principals came in and said, what does this mean, you know, reading at a certain time? And I said, well, you know, we start at this time, and I feel the class. She said, what do you mean you feel the class? I said, I look at the class as an organism. I try to keep in tune with the class.
That's right.
If they don't seem to be responding, I don't start blaming them. I change what's going on so that we can do something that's productive.
That's right.
I don't beat them over the death with. We're going to have 50 minutes of reading or 50 minutes of math, and you're not supposed to talk. You're not supposed to move. That's inhuman.
Do you miss teaching? You've retired now, right?
Yeah, well, I love doing my radio show, and I love writing books about it and hoping that somebody will read them and actually change their behavior.
Robert, give out your websites.
Well, my website is www.imaginativecreative.com, and my Blog Talk Radio is www.blogtalkradio.com.
Okay, and we've got the link for you, too, so don't worry about the slash. It's right linked up at Coast to Coast AM. Dot com. And if you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com as well. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Next hour, we're talking about quantum physics and our origins with Dr. Amit Goswami. He will be back here on Coast to Coast AM. This half hour, we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Robert Rose as we talk about his work, of course, Abuses of Power in Education and the Complete Teacher. Robert, let me ask you this. With this abuse that is out there, did you see this beyond just your own teaching? Was this happening with a lot of other teachers?
I actually had a 10-year program with at-risk kids, and I took kids in that actually, had turned off on teaching, turned off by the teachers,
mm-hmm.
And what happens is that a lot of kids do not buy into, somebody standing up there and telling them what to do all the time or insulting their racial or their ethnicity and things like that. And I knew all the different teachers in the district, and the principals would send me these kids, and then I would have an hour interview with each kid and his parents. And they would tell me the stories of what the teachers did to them, which is the reason they quit coming to school or the reason that they were violent. And the people would say, well, how do you handle these bad kids? I said, most of them are not bad kids. I said, they've been treated badly. I said, I look at the kid that's acting up as a child in pain. If you look at a child in pain, you have changed your paradigm. You have changed your mindset. And that's the same thing I did with parents. People would tell me, well, these kind of kids, they come because their parents are bad and their parents don't love them. And I said, I don't buy that. And so instead of telling the parent what I wanted them to do with their kid at home, I asked them, tell me about your kid. Tell me about how I can help them. Tell me who he is. And the parents would just, their jaws would drop. And at the end of this, they'd say, I can't believe somebody, after all the years and all the kids I've had, actually listened to what I had to say.
Is that something?
And that's it. When you start to empower the parents, when you start to empower the kids, the teachers say, well, then you lose your power. That's the wrong idea. That's the mindset of somebody who needs to feel powerful. I didn't have to feel powerful with these kids, because when I empowered them, I actually had more power because they did everything. At the end of the day, I was ready to teach for another 8 hours.
Yeah,
the other teachers
could get going. That's right. You're opposed to standardized testing. How come?
Because it doesn't. First of all, you give the kids the test, and then you never see it for about 6 months later. And so what
That's
good is
true.
It? The only purpose, as Dr. Poplin said, is to the test so that you can do something to change that kid's teaching, how you're going to teach them and what you're going to teach them. And also, we spend so much time on it, and it causes so much anxiety. I knew what the kids could do by sitting down individualizing. And I started individualizing in 1962 in Los Angeles. And I just barely got out of trouble with that, because the parents were just so delighted with the fact what I did. But if the principal had found out what I was doing, they protected me. The parents actually protected me. They said, everybody knows what you're doing, doctor. I was Mr. Rose then. And we're just delighted with the way that what you're doing with our kids. And the next year, the VP from the school, the school we fed to, came over and said, Mr. Rose, I can always tell your kids. I said, how's that? He said, they're the best kids, they're the smartest kids, and then they respect the teacher.
Good for you. I would have liked having you as a teacher, Robert. And just as you were interactive with your students, we're interactive here. We're going to take some calls for you.
That's fine.
Let's go to Michael in Phoenix to get things going. First-time caller. Hey, Michael, thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
My mom, she's been a teacher for over 20 years, and she actually teaches in LAUSD and recently got a job in the inner city Phoenix school. And my question to you, Robert, is how do you deal with kids who have behavior problems, severe behavior problems, like kids who fight back and always don't listen to the teacher.
Mm-hmm. And there are some. Robert, how do you reach them?
That's what I said. I dealt with those kids all my life. I took, in any class, any school I was in, I would take sometimes 2 and 3 grade levels in one classroom, and I would take the ADH kids, and the first thing I would tell the parents is tell your psychologist to call me, and I want your kid off ADH medication because I want to deal with him in his right mind. I don't want him drugged. And they did. And then when people would come in the room, they'd say, well, where are the ADH kids? I said, you tell me, because you can't tell it, because they don't act that way. Because when you change the structure of the classroom, and when I mean by saying the structure of the classroom, you listen to the kids. You observe them. You talk to them. You develop a relationship with the kids. And we don't do that. We are always telling them what they are supposed to do, and shut up and sit down, and that's it. And so many teachers do that, and they wonder why they get the kids all upset, and the kids won't do anything.
Yeah.
Kids will do anything for me.
What would happen, Robert, if you kids came into a class and the teacher said, so what do you want to talk about? And just lay it out there. Let them pick the subject matter. Let them do the things. Would that work?
Yeah, but you first of all, you better know that you better be prepared to handle what the kids will give you.
That's true.
You're gonna if you don't structure it, you're gonna get all kinds of things. They're gonna ask you things that'll make your hair stand up on end, and you're gonna be embarrassed, and you're not gonna be able to answer some of the questions. That's why I used to have a parent meeting the first 2 days of school, where everybody else was doing stuff. I would bring all the parents in, and I'd say, now look, I do all kinds of different things, you know, but I don't want you coming in and, you know, and complaining about things. I'm going to tell you what I do, and if you don't like what I do, take your kid out of my class and put him in another. The principal is going to do that. But I want you to know that I will talk to your kid about anything they want to know about. If you're uncomfortable with this, don't have him in my class, because I want to be able to be honest with the kid. If he asks me something about sex, I want to be able to tell him in the correct manner.
Mm-hmm.
If he asks about religion, I want to be able to talk to him.
What about
they hardly ever did it.
What about evolution and creationism? I mean, now you've got your hands tied behind your back. You can't talk about creationism in school.
Well, I did. You know, I mean, we talked about that, and we talked about evolution. But the thing is, as I said, I had a relationship with the parents too, not just with the children, not just with the students. You have to have a relationship with the parent. When I got in trouble with a principal one time, they were going to transfer me out of the school, and I had 37 parents. For 1 month, they picketed in front of the school to try to keep me from getting transferred.
Well, that's amazing.
How many times have you ever heard of
that? I've never heard of that. Never. Did
yeah.
Did you get some media coverage on that?
I was just about to get the L.A. coverage, and then the district had already moved me, so it didn't help. But it was wonderful to know the parents cared that much.
That's great support. Jeff is in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, how are you doing, first-time caller?
Thank you, Jeff.
Well, I just wanted to make a comment. I appreciate what you're doing. I kind of jumped in here a little late, but just got off work. But, you know, I think, you know, I got in trouble whenever I was a kid a lot. I never got any individual, you know, attention. I believe that, you know, separating a classroom and having every kid active is going to, you know, set them on a different path. You know, now that I'm older, I'm 30 years old now, you know, I love, like, the shows from Discovery Channel, you know, the Cosmos, you know, so on and so forth, you know. If I was able to get some individual attention like that, I can only imagine, you know, I still have a good job and so on and so forth, but that's something I built myself. You know, if I had some individual attention like that whenever I was younger, who knows, I could be a scientist, so on and so forth, so. You know, I just wanted to make a comment, and, you know, I appreciate what you guys are doing.
Good comment. Want to react at all to that, Robert?
Yeah, the reason that they did get individual attention from me is because I structured the classroom in a way that there was time for kids to be able to have what I call learned time. I would tell the kids in the beginning of the year, look, when I have a job and I finish it, I want to be able to have time for myself. And I said, I want to do the same for you, but I have to do my job. So here's what we're going to do. If we have a 15-minute classroom in 15-minute class time in math, if you get done in 30 minutes or 20 minutes or 10 minutes, and whatever we're trying to do, the time is yours. Well, they said, what do you mean the time is ours? The time is yours. I said, when I was a gifted kid in school,
I love that.
I didn't want to finish because all I got was more of the same stuff. And why should I do that? So I became a dreamer. I just sit there and dream. And then when the teacher said turn things in, I quickly finish and I do it. I said, I don't want to do that to you guys. I want you to feel free to be able to choose what you want to do.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing is, of all the things that they most wanted to do was get outside after they were done with something. So I had to set up with the principal and the parents that my kids, when they were finished, and I always had a room outside at the edge of the school there, and they could go out the playground. And the parents signed a consent slip that they knew their kid was going to go outside and play without any adult supervision. Well, you can't do that now at all. I mean, they'd be sued. But the kids came back to later on. They told me, you know, Dr. Rose, you know, we go out there and we would have a good time and we get in fights and everything, and you didn't know anything about it. And I said, well, what do you mean I didn't know anything about it? Well, you didn't know we were having any fights. I said, did you solve them? Did you come in bloody nose and anything? Did you solve the fights? Well, yeah, that's my point. I said, I was teaching you how to take care of yourself. You don't need somebody above you telling you what to do. There's always going to be somebody telling you what to do unless you can figure out what to do for yourself. And I want to...
You there?
And it worked.
There he is.
That worked.
All right. Now, you were cut off right at the end there for a second or so. Let me ask you this. On a 1 to 10, with 10 being the best, how would you grade our educational system today in this country?
2.
2?
Yep.
What about other countries? Japan, for example.
I don't think there's hardly any country that does what you need to be able to do to really get kids to be at their best. You have to give kids the chance to be free, but you have to structure it so when they do things wrong, that they face the consequences. We would make the rules together. We would decide the consequences together. And so when they broke a rule, I'd say, okay, George, you finally admit that you did such and such. Which of the three consequences do you want? Well, when he chose the consequence, he committed to his consequence. And I hardly had anybody have any problem. Another thing happened was that if he wasn't satisfied, if he didn't think he committed anything, and we couldn't prove it, and I was going to punish him, he had a choice to have the student court. In every classroom from first grade on, I had a student court, and he could call a student court. He would get a kid that was going to be his defense attorney, and if he could prove that he was innocent, fine. But if he didn't, the judge would determine his punishment. It wasn't a choice. So he moved from choice to no choice if he lost. And most kids didn't do it. They didn't choose student court, but they knew it was there. The thing that was happening in that class that doesn't happen in schools is they got justice. When kids feel they're going to get justice, they behave.
They sure do. They
but
school themselves.
When they know they're not going to get justice, that's when they act up. When that last caller, when he said, you know, the kids act up and they come in, if you structure it and they know they're going to get justice, they're not going to be causing fights. In the 10 years that I had the program with the most difficult kids in San Bernardino, which is a large district, we had 7 fights in 10 years, and 3 of them were between two girls, the same 2 girls.
Yeah, that's
so,
that's
mean,
low.
Amazing what you can do.
Let's go to Julie, Racine, Wisconsin, first-time caller. Hey, Julie.
Hi, God bless you both, and Mr. Norrie, you are phenomenal. You are a man with such integrity and honor. I just thank God for you.
You're making me blush, Julie.
This is close to my heart because I'm a mother of 4, 3 daughters through school. One is a Marine sergeant right now, and got him through school by literally the grace of God. I have a 12-year-old son. Exactly what you're saying, sir, is so true. The control issues at school, all along I keep thinking, when are you going to ask the moms? When are you going to ask the moms what some of these issues are and discuss these things without having us almost be the criminal these days? it's gotten so perverted where the parents at this point are the enemy. My son is 12 years old and he's gone through so many things with teachers, and you are exactly right. He got all A's with good teachers that he loved and were very, very good to him. And the ones that treated him very badly, he did very badly.
That's right. That happens a lot.
But, yes, sir. But the children also is the problem. There's such a degree of bullying.
Mm-hmm.
There's such a degree of absolute. My son was asked in sixth grade to join a gang, on and on and on until he couldn't. He absolutely refused to go to school.
Well, the peer pressure is horrible. And let me ask you this, Robert, in terms of the parents themselves, I mean, how much do they weigh in on this? Did you have a lot of parents who were concerned about their children, like Julie would be, and they contact you and they want to know?
Well, the thing is, after I had that parent conference the way I did it, they were so ecstatic.
Oh, we lost you again.
They would let me hang with their kid out to dry, and they would never say anything. But the thing is that I didn't make things tough on the parent. I didn't tell the parent, now, I want you to read a half hour every day with your kid. I want you to correct his spelling. I said, my job is to teach you your kid. Your job is to love your kid, and I know you love your kid because you've been telling me how you show your love for your kid. Just show your love for your kid. That's enough. You don't have to do anything else. I will teach him. He will have a great year, and as long as I know you're not going to come in, you know, and rag on me and, you know, and challenge everything I do, I'm going to be free to be able to be myself. I'm going to be myself. Your kid is going to be himself. And the kid and the parents would say, you know, Dr. Rose, I can't believe the change in my kid. You know, he's just such a nicer kid because he's happy, because he's not being pressured all the time. But he knows his limits. He knows that he has to be responsible for his behavior, but he knows he's going to get justice. And again, I can't repeat that often enough. People in everything, and that's the abuses of power throughout everything, people do not feel they get justice, and it increases their feeling of insignificance. And if a person feels insignificant, he's going to do something to make himself feel significant. And there's where all the trouble starts, in the schools, and in the businesses, and in the ethical halls of Congress, because they do not feel significant.
Can we fix this, Robert? Is it doable?
Yes, I think so. I mean, if I can do it, I think I'm a smart person, but the things I did, anybody can do, providing they're willing to release some of their obvious legal powers and let the people be empowered. You have to empower people to get your own. Actually, it makes you more powerful. When you try to control people, you're spending most of your time controlling them. When you empower people, they do their jobs. That's what I told you. At the end of the day, I was fresh. I wasn't tired.
Well, you were ready to go. You know what? I know the same feeling. You know, when I'm done doing a 4 or 5 hour live broadcast, I'm ready to go again. I mean, I used to do this years ago. I mean, it energizes you, and you've hit it. The name of the book, Abuses of Power in Education and the Complete Teacher, it's available at Amazon.com by Dr. Robert Rose.